I want to start out, first of all, saying that the most important tool you have is a pencil and a notebook. Okay? Keeping records allows you to do good plans next year. Just, you don't have to be, I got a little bit on the different records you need to keep. There's only six you really need to keep. And if you're just home gardening and you're not going to market, it goes down to like two or three records, okay? And you just keep them separate because it's a little easier to get the energy of it. I mean, it's a little easier to collect the information if they're separate. When I say record, basically, just whatever works for you. If you want to do it on a computer, fine. If you want to do it in a hand notebook, fine. And what you're doing is every day you make a log. And I like to have a column for the date, a column for the day of the week, because I like to see what day of the week stuff was. And then, of course, you need to know the month. And then I like to do an action. And I got about a vocabulary of 20 garden actions. So I have an action word here. And then I have a remarks column. And I do this. I keep mine on I tried it on this, but a spreadsheet works better for me. And that way, you know, I can just do action, remarks, and not have to write the date over. Well, you could do that there, too, but you don't have to write the date if you do a lot of different actions. But that way you can say, when did I fertilize? And instead of having to read through all this text, you know, you can say, oh, fertilize, there it is. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. So all my action words are in a column by themselves. All my main action words, I should say. So that's the way I keep, that's my main going back and record tool. And I put notes in the remarks like how many pounds of nitrogen I put on or how many pounds of feather meal I put on, when stuff germinates, how many days from seed to germination, when stuff blooms, the date it blooms on. Sometimes I don't have time to calculate it, so I just put the date I see the bloom on. And I don't put that in the action column, but I write it in the remarks column. And that way, in the winter, when you got time, you can go back, and when you're starting to plan for next year, you can say, wow, you know, that bloomed a little earlier than I thought. Maybe I'll plant that a little later or something like that. And this is the way you become a better and better and better gardener, because you learn from mistakes of your past. Okay? And the only way you're going to learn from this, you know, you'll forget all the things you said you were going to remember. But if you write it down, you won't forget it, and it'll make you a better farmer, better gardener. Okay? Everybody agrees with that, right? There's your tool categories. You're prepping your bed, your tillage, your weeding, your groundskeeping, like mowing, cover crop management, like a flail mower or like those hedge shears, planting, trellising, irrigating, fertilizing. All these things take tools. All these actions take tools. Monitoring your crops. I have some monitoring things here. And the guys I use, this guy, you know, he's a home business guy up in Minnesota. His name is Luke Lemmers. And if you send your International Ag Lab test through him, he can blend those fertilizers they recommend for you all in one package. Okay? And that's really neat, because I had to a la carte this thing for years. And, you know, I had to buy a 50-pound bag and then pay shipping costs. Now I just buy what the recommendation should say. He blends all the dry ingredients up for me, and I get it sent to me, and that's what I use, and I really like that service. So some of these guys recommend things that are biologically friendly, but you're not going to find them in Home Depot, and you're not going to find them at Ace, and you're not going to find them at Lowe's. And even if you go to your county co-op, the floor person's not going to know what you're talking about. They don't know there's different kinds of lime. When you go in there and you say you want calcitic lime, they're going to like, it's just lime, buddy. They say, no, there's different variations of lime. I want calcitic lime. I don't want dolomite lime. They don't know the difference. Now, there's somebody in those co-op places, you know, every state has some. The guy in the back room, there's one knowledgeable person there. You've got to find that knowledgeable person and tell them what you want. Don't trust the floor person to know anything. And even if a co-op person doesn't know anything on the sales floor, you know anybody at Home Depot doesn't know what you're talking about, okay? All right. But anyways, Luke Lemmers has this service, and here it is. And they test with the Reams model. He sends it to International Ag Labs. So that's one of the soil testers you have. And what I'm going to do is, talking about monitoring tools, this is a refractometer. We discussed that. It's in a nice case. The only thing it's missing is, oh, and I just broke the case. Oh, well. And that's a refractometer, brand new. He sent it to me, you know, because I got a relationship with him, and he wanted to give me a gift, you know. But I already have one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this silent bid on this. How's that? And just put put your bid on a box, and the highest bid gets it. This is worth about $75, and this is worth about $30. So total is about $105. Bid whatever you want, and the highest bid gets it. Okay. That's the juice extractor tool, because you don't have to do that so much with an orange or something like that that's juicy. But when you get a leaf, what you have to do is, and this one is, it's got a calibration screw on it. Mine is, I paid a little bit more for mine. I guess it was like a $150 one. Anyways, it's self-calibrating, but this one has a little screw, I noticed, and you have to calibrate it every now and then for temperature corrections, okay? But it's just a prism on a stick. It's nothing complicated. But that's how you get your bricks reading. And then this... what you have to do is you have to go out and ask ladies for their old pantyhoses. They think you're pervert, but you're not. You're a farmer. And you wrap it up, and you wad the leaf up, and you wrap it up, and you cut the pantyhose into little squares, and you fold it around the leaf wad, and then you're able to crush that. And if you don't have the pantyhose around it, it tends to just squash out the sides. You know, it doesn't really make any juice. But if you have that pantyhose binding it up and keeping it from squashing out, you'll get juice out of the leaf. And that's a little trick. And then you can measure your leaf bricks while you're growing and do some corrective action while you still have time. And that way, but if you're just a consumer and you're not growing, you can take this to your produce store and talk to your produce manager and say, I'd like to brick some of your apples you're getting in. I only want to buy Hybrix apples. I only want to buy Hybrix broccoli. And you can keep your grocery store honest. He's going to tell the distributor. The distributor is going to tell the farmer 1,500 miles away. And the only way you're going to get Hybrix food is by growing more biologically friendly. You can't get there conventionally. Okay? And so consumers, you don't have to be a farmer, can change the face of farming by demanding for their hard-earned money, Hybrix produce. Okay? That's how consumers have power. Because everybody wants your dollar, and they're trying to do the least amount of work to get the most dollar from you. Okay? Keep them honest. Tell them you want good produce to put in your body that's Hybrix, and you're measuring it. You're not taking their word for it. Okay? So we'll just do a silent auction on that. All right. That's the monitoring part. Harvesting tools, equipment maintenance, of course, you know, some of these things, engines, you need files to keep these things sharp. They don't work unless they're sharp. The lady was talking about them just bending over. Well, if they're not sharp, it will just bend it over. It won't do its job. Okay. So you need a set of good files. Prepping tools. You have to wash those root vegetables. You need a hose in sprayer to get a nice spray going on the vegetables. You need a sink that you can drain mud and stuff out of, that, you know, goes out into the yard somewhere, or, you know, waters the fruit trees or something like that. You could pipe it into the fruit trees. So there's a lot of prep tools you need. And then, of course, you got to have your market tools. When you go to market, you got to have a tent. You got to have a table. You got a tablecloth. I got a whole box of market materials. Plus, I got an easy up tent, and I got all the gear for going to market. You know, that's a whole other set of tools. Okay, different types of shovels. I got one shovel on here. This is the most important one, and every farmer should get these two things first. I'll just go through it real quick. This is your first set of tools, and they're like salt and pepper shakers. Usually they sell them together, just like salt and pepper shakers. You got one, you should have the other, okay? They're called a spade fork, or some people call it a digging fork, some people call it a potato fork, and a spade shovel. You notice it's kind of flat, not much concavity there. It's kind of flat on the bottom. I like the little bit of curve on the bottom. Some of them are just flat. It's got a thick part here so you don't break your boots when you're stepping on it. You know, it has a little pad in there. Because if it's sharp there, you end up going through a lot of shoes. And those are expensive, too. I take a right angle grinder, and every year I grind a new edge on it. Okay, and I keep it sharp. That way it cuts right into the dirt, and I don't have to work myself to death. Just like a sharp knife in the kitchen. Get dull knives, you do a lot of extra work. You get sharp knives, it works a lot easier. Same with the garden tools. Okay? The reason this is a spade shovel is you can border with it. You can crack soil open with it. You just do so many things with it. And it's short handle. Don't do like some guys do. You know, they get into a tight spot and they'll put a pole on the end of it. It's meant just to use one man's pressure on that amount of handle. That amount of leverage, thank you. That amount of foot-pounds. If you start trying to cheat on it, you're going to break the tool. This is an $80 one. This is a cheap I inherited it. This is a cheap Ace Hardware one, but I was managed to find another handle when it broke, because the cheap ones always break. And this time I found a handle for it. But if I had to get another one, if it got broken beyond repair, I'd go out and get an $80 one. Good tools are worth the money. You can pass it on to your grandkids, and as long as you do a little bit of maintenance, they'll last a lifetime. So anyways, different types of shovels. You got a round point shovel, square point shovel. There's your garden spade, the one I just showed you. You got a trenching shovel, and you got a drain spade shovel. Always, if you're trying to do a job, always use the right tool. It's a lot easier. If you're trying to shovel stuff off a sidewalk or something hard, you use a flat nose. If you're trying to dig into the dirt, you use a round nose. If you're trying to, a lot of times we get puddles and we want to drain that puddle away. Well, you dig in a little channel to get that water to drain away. You use a drain spade. If you're trying to do a deep channel, you have to use a trenching spade, which is kind of like a version of the drain spade, but it just goes a little deeper. Okay? When you want to lay pipe or something like that, you might use that trenching one. Or get a ditch witch. Anyway, here are your different types of forks. This is the spade fork I just showed you. This one's great because, you know, you can aerate your soil with this. You're not going deep, but you want to crack open your soil without blenderizing it with a tiller. You just go in here and crack, step 6 inches, crack, get it all the way down in there, crack it open, crack. It's easy work, takes a little time. It's good therapy, good exercise. You're out in the sun. Well, some guy walked down and says, you know, we need a boombox out here. We need some music. And I'm going, I'm listening to the birds. I like that. You know? Well, he said, we'll put on classical music. I said, I still like the birds better. Now, here you get different times on these things. This, what is that one for? Wood chips. Because, you know, wood chips fall through because they're small. So you need something with a lot of tines. This one is the opposite extreme. That's for hay because you can't get the fork in a pile of hay with that, all those tines. You got to get something with less forks and less, you know, friction and to penetrate a hay bale. So that's a hay fork, and that's a wood chip fork. And you got stuff in between for anything, everything in between. Okay, so think about that when you go buy your. I got just sort of the middle of the road one, which kind of works for wood chips and it kind of works for hay, but you know, yeah, just a mediocre one. You got different types of rakes. Of course, we all know the leaf rake probably. Leaves are good. Leave them in your yard. Chop them up. Let them go back in the ground. Or collect them and make compost out of them, like somebody was saying. I do that too. There's your typical garden rake. Here's your cultivator where you can scratch those weeds. Let's say you don't want to get one of these tools right away. You can scratch weeds away. Or you can sow your grass seed and stuff, your cover crop seed, with that cultivator. And this is a bed rake, which I have one of those. It's kind of a specialty rake. It's a lightweight. It's not a leaf rake. It's not a garden rake. It's you know, it bends pretty easy. But what you do is, oh, yeah. Did you start that? Okay, everybody start. Okay, let me hit this in the thing. Anyways, what you do is once you get your bed tilled and you get it kind of roughly raked smooth, this is for direct seeding. You don't have to go through all this with transplants. You come in and all the big dirt clods that might get in the way of your seeder in there, you just sort of lightly go through the soil. You don't have to bear down on it and just sort of lightly rake and dump to the side. Lightly rake and dump to the side. And do your whole 4 foot wide bed all the way down with this thing. Doesn't take long at all. And it just sort of finishes it off nice so your seeder can go through it without, you know, stumbling into clods or some trash, you know, that doesn't break, doesn't decompose, and that sort of thing. So that's the other one. Spade fork, spade shovel, we already covered that. Okay, broad fork. Basically, all this is... I drove. This is a broad fork. You get these. I got most of my tools I try to get from Johnny's because they're just good at service and they have good quality tools. And this is basically a potato fork or a spade fork on steroids. Okay. You can see you're covering like three times, maybe four times the width. You can go faster. It goes a little deeper, I think. I think it's a little deeper. Well, maybe not. No, it's about the same depth. But anyways, it does the job. And these are protective tips. These are real sharp tips. I file them and keep them sharp. This is a beauty. This is a European-made, Swiss-made tool because they don't make them in the States, and it's the only place you can get them. But it's really quality made. And what happens is, you know, of course, I hit a root one time, and I thought, oh, I just got some tough soil, you know, and I just hanked on it, and I end up bending one of these blades all the way back. Well, this is a $200 tool. I can't just go buy another one. You know, that's a lot of money. And I called Johnny's up, and I said, oh, you know, I just paid $200 for this, you know, 3 weeks ago, and now it's ruined. You know, because I had one of these things all bent all the way back where it hung up on a root. And he said, oh, no, you don't have to worry. This is a good tool. I said, really? He says, yeah, just put a pipe over it and bend it back. It's made of a metal that doesn't weaken when it yields. You can bend it back, and it's just as strong as it was when it first, before it bent. And that's a quality tool. That's why you don't get that buying tools made from China. Okay? That's $25 for a reason. They didn't pay the guy anything to make it, and the engineering behind it isn't very solid either. They didn't pay the engineer anything to design it either. They probably skipped that part. Here they said, hey, we get the special metal, then it will never break, and you can bend it back. And it's worth $200. Aerating the soil. This is a way you can aerate the soil without churning it up. I can go deep. And if I had a tractor and I had a lot, I couldn't, you know, if I had over a quarter of an acre, I probably couldn't do this. It would take too much time, right? But if I got anything less than a quarter, I can do it. If I had more than a quarter and I had a tractor, then I put a subsoiler on the end of my tractor. Nobody's heard of that, but a subsoiler is basically this for a tractor. Okay?
Are those yellow things protectors?
Yeah, they're protectors.
They come off.
Okay. Right.
You just want them to stay sharp and not get dulled and banged up. Well, the trick is that makes it easier when it's sharp. Yeah. We already went over the trap. This is the trapezoid hoe. I don't have a collinear. It's on my buy list. But I like the trapezoid hoe because it's a little more forgiving. The collinear is wider. It's about 7 inches. This is about, I don't know, 4.5 maybe. Yeah, it goes between the plant. Remember, the rows get taken care of with the stirrup hose in between the rows. In between the plant gets taken care of with this. And you see how it's angled? You're supposed to just slice it underneath the soil, thumbs pointed up, back straight, and you're just going down like that. And I like to do this side of the plant and then the middles and then come down here and maybe do two rows like that and then come back and do the other side all the way down. And then go to the other side and do the same. If I got four rows, you know, it depends on how many rows you have. But just like this. Like, let's just pretend there's some plants there. I've already done the between the rows with the stirrup hoe, right? And I come in here with this, and I just go, yank, yank, yank. And then I come to the next one, yank, yank, yank. And if I have another one, I go, doot, 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 doot. And sometimes you have to do it back and forth a little bit. And I'm not trying to pull dirt. I mean, you're going to pull a little dirt. All I'm trying to do is shave the weed. And they're little weeds. These things will not work after that weed gets an inch tall. Okay? You can forget it. You got to get the weed when it's young for these things to work, and it's got to be sharp for it to work. But I'm telling you, it's a lot easier being diligent like that than having to come back and try to pull big old weeds. These blades are another quality tool made in Switzerland. You can replace, buy new blades for cheaper than the whole thing costs. This is about $50. And I tell you a real story. I had a couple who wanted to do a little plot in their backyard, so I helped them. I sort of showed them what to do. I didn't do the work for them because, you know, and they are very meager means, you know. And they were up in Chattanooga area, and I said, well, you know, you're really going to need at least get this hoe. Even before the stirrup hoe, because you can still do between the rows with this, just takes a little longer. And I said, get one of these trapezoid hoes. It's not as long as a collinear, but it's a little more forgiving when you're starting out. You can cover more ground with that because it's 7 inches long, but you got to be a little more exacting with that, okay? Or you can slice some stuff up. So, anyways, they said, I don't know, the price, it was $40 or $50. They said, for a hoe, I can go down to Ace Hardware and get one for $12. You know, I said, yeah, but you won't get a hoe like this. You'll get a big old American Standard hack hoe, you know, and you'll be over there like this all day long, and you'll give up. I just said, save the money and spend it. Just wait till you know, put a dollar a week away and buy one after 40 weeks or something, you know. though the hose, yeah. Well, these will too. You got to keep them washed, and you take care of your tools. You got to take care of your tools because they take care of you. So,
did they buy the tool?
They did buy the tool. Thank you. Let's get back on track. They did buy the tool, and every time I go up there, they tell me, "Yeah, that's the best $40 we ever spent." And they couldn't really afford $40, you know. They were, but it made, and they had a nice garden. Well, they still let it get away from them sometimes. And I say, well, you're no point in buying this tool if you're not going to get out there and weed it while it's young. But it'll show you something about yourself, and hopefully you can approve it. Right? No, I had to. There's the stirrup hoe. That's the China-made one. There's the wheel hoe. I'll get it out since I brought it. Let me take this out. Oh, how did I get this in? Yeah, I brought those are the two I have. They make about 6 or 7 different sizes. How do we do this, Dr. Connell? And they're probably looking for their trolley, we lost a $500 trolley somewhere. I didn't want to have to unpack this thing and pack it. But this is a wheel hoe. You can see the handles for the cameras. You can see the handles are offset, right? This is a $300 tool, but worth the money. It saves you time. Remember, time is money. Okay? So I say buy them. And if you want to go in the business of making them in America, this is catching on. You might have a budgeting business here. But if you're not into gardening and you're like building things, I got to tighten that. It's a little wobbly. But see how it shakes like that? It's supposed to oscillate like that. Sometimes I call it a hula hoe. I just call them a stirrup hoe. But some people call them a hula hoe. But you go down. I'm not walking on my bed. I'm walking on my walkway. And I'm going down here. And you just do a back and forth motion. You cut. It cuts both ways. It's sharp on both edges. You cut. And then it kicks back and you expose what you just cut to the sun. Then you cut and expose, cut and expose, cut and expose. And you just do this kind of rhythm. And man, you go 300 feet in no time. And that's why you gear your spacing so you can just get in between it comfortably. You don't want to leave too much space because weeds will grow where you don't get, and you'll have to do extra weeding. You want to go with just, give yourself a couple inches on either side of it. So that's 7 inches, that one. So, maybe a couple, I could get in there when I space things, maybe 11 inches. Cut and expose, cut and expose. And you fly down a row. But you're doing it when they're young, and you're keeping that blade sharp, okay? And you can replace that blade. You can replace this. You can replace the handle. All the different parts are cheaper than the whole. You don't get that with a China-made tool. Most of the stuff is made in Europe, Switzerland. The Europeans are way ahead when it comes to small farming. Because, they don't have much land and they got a lot of people. okay, stirrup hoe. There's a file set. You usually have a rough file and a finishing file or somewhere in between. That's the different names of files, and that's important to keep these things sharp. When you're over here using these kind of hose, it's too late. Too hard. I don't have one on me. I have one in the car. I didn't bring it. But we all seen the bypass pruner. We all seen the anvil pruner. Can everybody tell me when you would use an anvil and when you'd use a bypass?
Use the anvil on really thicker stuff.
Nope. Anybody else? Okay. Anvils are made for living stems. Bypasses are made for living stems because they're more like a scissor, and living stems are a little softer. Anvil pruners can handle a little, not so much larger, but tougher, dead, woody stems. And you really don't. The reason you don't want to use a living stem on this because you tend to have a tendency to crush the back side of the stem as the sharp side comes in. You don't want to crush a living stem. You're just trying to prune it, right? Here on a woody stem that's dead, you don't care about crushing it. crushing a dead stem. This is for living, pruning, and this is for taking out dead stuff. No, you can get the good ones, you know, at Home Depot. And that's one thing you can get at Home Depot. Like, you got the cheap one and you got a little more expensive one. I always buy the more expensive stuff. You know, I can afford it with can't afford it with cars, but I can afford it with those things. Now we have this thing, which I didn't really have a section on this, but if you make your own compost and do what did I tell the whole class about making the compost bin? I told somebody. This is it. This is the aerator. Now, they make one with little wings like this one that fold up when you push it in and fold out when you pull it up. But sometimes getting that thing in a compacted compost pile is pretty tough, whereas this screws in pretty easy. Now, once you get it in there, you're going to have to pull it out. Sometimes that's tough. But it's a good work. I mean, it's a workout pulling it out. It screws in easy, and then you got to pull it out. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll go in a little bit, pull, then go in a little deeper and pull. And that makes it a little easier. Yeah. But this is great for those make those bin type compost piles, okay? And then, of course, I didn't bring one, but you can check your temperatures in the middle if you like to do those kind of things and check. I got this at Johnny's. It's made of stainless steel.
What is it called?
I think they call it a compost crank. Yeah.
What are you
doing when you're putting air holes. Remember, we're trying to develop aerobic microbes that love air. And as the compost pile breaks down, it gets kind of tighter and more packed. Just gravity. So all you're doing is, you know, every week you go out there, poke a few holes in it, and keep the air flowing through it. And more of it breaks down for you. And it doesn't, if you get it all packed, guess what happens? You lose the air and it goes anaerobic. Then it's starting to stink and draw flies and all kinds of junk. Good compost doesn't smell. If it smells, you got something wrong with it. It's not good compost. Don't use it. That's right. I was right where you guys were, you know, 5 years ago, going, wow, I didn't know that. It's so simple. Why didn't I know that, you know? I know exact. I mean, you know. Say that again. Nah. You don't. Hey man, what? Remember that site I had Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard or Bernard Claude? Remember that one? What did Bernard Claude say? We don't agree with Louis Pasteur. Bernard Claude says you get the environment right, the earthworms, the bacteria will come. If it's wrong, they won't be there. So if you make an environment where they like it, they'll come. You don't have to go buy it. I mean, there's some things you're going to have to buy, like these hoes. But don't buy stuff you don't need to buy. I mean, I don't go buy ladybugs because, you know, if I have enough insects that ladybugs eat, they'll come eventually. You know, sometimes I have to wait a little while, but if you're patient, they'll come because the food's there. This is called an earthway cedar. And for a small farmer doing, you know, 3 acres or less, this is a great tool. And what you do is you have different seed plates that come with it. I bought a few extra optional ones. And there are different sizes, and it's marked on there. And you put it right here. You put the seed plate right there. And it goes on this little hub. Uh-oh. All these tools are not good for microphones. And and you see how it's designed. What happens is, I don't know if you can see it or not, but there's a little recess here. This turns with a wheel, right, like this, and it's connected with a pulley right here. Belt. It's pulley with a belt, and it turns the plate in there, and it picks up the seed in these little cavities, and then when it gets to the top, it drops it in that slot, goes down the chute, and into this knife, and it's like the big guys use on their big tractors. This is just a hand version of it, okay? They call it knifing it in. You know, you can certain fertilizers you knife in. But you knife in seeds at a certain depth. And here you can adjust the depth with this little engineer wing nut. You adjust that with a wing nut, and you can adjust it to go like 1/4 inch deep or 2 inches deep by adjusting, sliding that up and down. And it makes seeding things real quick. The only thing is, you might not be seeding. If you only got a 10-foot bed, you might not be seeding a lot, so you don't buy enough seed. If you don't buy enough seed, you don't get enough in there to pick up. So sometimes you have to overbuy some of the smaller seeds, even if you're a small gardener, and then just sell it to your friends or give it to your friends or whatever, because, you know, I don't like to keep seed, huh? Well, yeah, if you're just going 10 feet, you might want to just do it by hand. But if you're having to go 20, you know, over 10 feet, use it. The cool thing is, the chain on the back is to kind of cover it up. I usually go back with a garden rake. And I kind of pound it down a little bit just to press the dirt on top of the seed I just planted. So the chain doesn't really do a really good job. It just sort of covers it up a little bit, okay? But I beg your pardon, on that one I don't. The back wheel actually, presses it in. So you don't have to do anything. I mean, it's planted when you do that. This is a kickstand, so you can set it up, but it doesn't work a lot. You need to make it wider or something. But the other thing that this is really good for, you don't even put the plate in, and even when you're setting out transplants, remember you want straight rows? Well, what you do is, this is a marker here. Really ingenious. Simple stuff, but really well made. And you can set, you can mark your row with sticks on this one, or go by your straight edge, you know, and get that first row straight. And then this marks the row however far you want the next row to be, right beside it. And then you come back around, you can put this on the other side, go down that mark with your next line. Now you don't need the sticks. You got a line that this has made. You go down this way, and you're marking another one. You turn, get down the end of the row, you turn it back the other way. You go down this way, you mark another line. Now you can use that when you're direct seeding, or you can do it with transplants. And then when you do it with transplants, obviously, you know, that's good for direct seeding. But when you do it with transplants, and I am selling, I'm going to talk about these too. Don't let me forget about talking about these. But when you're doing it with transplants, you can pull your, what you do is you have your line out there. I usually string this. This is 100-foot tape. I'd really like to find a 200-foot. They sell 100-foots and 300-foots. 200 would be ideal. This one works, though. 100-foot tape. You get it at Home Depot. It's another thing you can get at Home Depot. And you lay it out beside. And what I do is I have this laying on the ground right beside my beds, or in the middle of the bed sometimes. And I'll just come down here, and I'll have to take a stick and slightly push these out, right? I soak it in some water. That's another class, but I soak it in some, you know, water to give it a little kickstart. And then I just go down while it's dripping. I let it drain as much as I can, but water mixed with some stuff, a little starter fertilizer. And then I just go in, and I lay the transplants right at 6 inches apart or a foot apart or wherever I'm planting them, and I just drop them, boom. You know, like this. Boom, 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 boom. Go all, lay them out all down that one row. And before the sun bakes them too much, I usually do one row at a time. And I come back. And I get my right angle trowel. Or, if you like dibbles, you can use a dibble. Everybody seen these? Dibbles? You probably haven't seen a right angle trowel. This just makes it a little easier, a little faster, okay, than a straight handled trowel. Or a dibble. I like the trowels better. I don't know. I just like them better. But sometimes I use the dibble, like for onions and stuff like that. But it's nice to have options, you know. So I bought both. And you just go in, and those things are laying right where they need to be. So you don't pay attention to the tape. Because if you did your job right, you dropped it exactly where it was supposed to be. And you just, without thinking, you come in. I like to get on my knees. The good guys, you know, they stand up and go, boom, 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 and just... You're going to have to bend over. That's a little bit of a work digging them in. But you can go really fast. And you just get all those ones you just laid out right in the ground really fast. Well, they're in those plugs. You know, there's dirt wrapped around them. I mean, these are plugs, you know, like transplant plugs. And we might as well talk about this right now while we're at it. What's the next one? Okay, there we just covered that. We already did. We didn't do the conductivity meter. I'll pick up on that. While we're talking about this, these are germination trays. I sell these two for $7 each, and I got a few with me. You can't find these on the internet. I cornered the market on these, but I don't have that many, so it's not going to help me that much. But I got a special relationship. Henderson, up in Hendersonville, North Carolina, there's a big nursery. do, you know, all of North America with flowers. They started in the 70s, and then by the 1980s, they were like, we're tired of buying these cheesy flat trays with their two parts. This lasts maybe 3 or 4 years. This lasts 1 or 2. The problem with, if you're going to go this route, this is about $1 each. This is maybe 75 cents each. Usually I used to say you got $2 wrapped up in this, right? And you're having to replace them every, you know, depending on which one, every 2 years, let's say, average. If you're going to do that route, go with this kind, because this kind bows in the middle. It doesn't really touch that bottom of the carrier. And when it bows in the middle, all your water tends to puddle in the middle. And you waterlog the middle ones, and these ones are drain better, and they grow faster, and your middles don't grow good. And you don't want that in a germination tray. You want them all to come up at the same size. Okay? You don't. You really hurt yourself when some are growing faster than others. Okay?
You make them up yourself.
What's that? I put my own germination dirt in there and grow my own seeds and put them in a... I have a friend who has a greenhouse. I don't have one myself. And he lets me use it. I pay him rent on the greenhouse for the space. Or I just... I have one friend. I just give him the seed and he does it all. I pay him... I buy the seed and he puts full of dirt and sells these things back to me for $10. And he gives me my... These you have to throw away, but he gives these back to me. I don't want to give him my trays, you know. And they grow right there, and that's where I get them back. That's a neat trip. He likes it. Easy money for him. Saves me a lot of time since I don't have a greenhouse.
But they don't fall out of there when you pick them up.
Which ones? No, no. These are windstrip trays, and they're patented by that operation up that nursery up in and they're a multi-million-dollar company, and they designed these because they were getting tired of going through so much plastic. So the Dutch guy sat down and designed this perfect tray. It's hard plastic. It lasts for 10 to 20 years. I mean, they're still using them over in hot Africa. You know, they give away some stuff for mission projects. And they're still, the owner told me they're still using them in Ethiopia 20 years later. And they've been sitting out in the hot sun. They don't get brittle. They got a UV retardant in them. So you can use them over. All you got to do is wash them real good right after you're finished with them when the dirt's still soft in there. Wash them front, back. I just power jet a hose on them, you know, all the different ways, and wash all the dirt off, and then front and back. And then set them out in the sun, let them sun sterilize so you don't, you know, transfer any diseases you might have to the next crop. And let them sun sterilize for a day or two, and then stack them up and use them again next year, or use them in the fall. You know,
I'd use one off at all. You know.
Well, what you do is you get a wheelbarrow, put some germination dirt in there.
Where do you get that? I'm down to one.
Well, you can get on the internet and buy germinate. You want to buy germination dirt. You don't want to buy potting soil because potting soil is a little chunkier. It's made for potting stuff up. You want to buy germination dirt that's a little finer. And I just dump a big bag. I make my own up with peat moss and perlite and vermiculite and worm castings and a few other little goodies. And I make my own up and stir it up, and I usually put it in it. Or you can buy it pre-made. It's okay. And you put it in a wheelbarrow or a cement mixer. You can get the cement mixing bins at Home Depot just for the home cement guy. And I usually do it in a wheelbarrow. And all you do is put it on top of the germination dirt and just heap it on real fast. And then smooth it out. And then drop it. And that gets any air pockets out of it. Then heap it on another time, because after you drop it, you're going to come below the profile here a little bit. Heap it on another time, smooth it out, and then plant. Do your fingers. Plant your seed. I usually do, if the germination is 90% or better, I do 2 seeds in it. If it's worse than 90% or lower than 90%, I do 3 seeds. Because you don't want to do too many, because you're going to spend all your time thinning, because you're going to have to thin it down to 1. Okay? But you do that later. But you always want to give yourself 2 chances. You don't want to have a dead cell, because now you're watering dirt. I mean, what good does that do you? That's just a waste of efficiency.
Now, when you're thinning, do you pull that out or snip it off with scissors?
I like to snip it with scissors. Good question. Some people do. Some people just pinch it, you know, You always usually need a long thumb fingernail so you can pinch things.
So when you plant the seeds, you drop down and you stick it with your finger, or you got something you stick down?
No, you just you make a little divot with your finger, or you can make a board. People make divot boards. But you make a little divot with your finger, you know, just guesstimate it, quarter inch, half inch, whatever it says. And then you put it back down. And this time, because I don't want to run the risk of knocking the seed out of the little divot, because some of the seeds are pretty shallow, you know, like lettuce. You don't plant that very deep at all. And you might knock it out if you just sort of heaped it on like you did originally. So now I'll set it down in there, and I'll pick it up, and I'll just sort of, real fast though, I'll just, you know, come from the vertical position more. I use two hands and, you know, and I'll get it piled pretty high, because now when you level it off about a quarter inch higher than the tray. And then once you get it nice level, you press that down on top of the seed. And that's the fast way to do it. Okay, and then you water it in good. Now these have a real open bottom, so there's no problem with water. That, you know, they're very drain very well.
Where do you set it then?
You want to put these. What they do is they air prune. You ever heard of soil blocks? I think I'm going to get to soil blocks.
Yeah.
Soil blocks are great. You don't have to buy all this plastic. They're a lot cheaper for all the sets of soil blocks, but they're a lot. For me, they were a lot slower, and you got to get your mix just right. They sell you an expensive mix. Or you can make it a little cheaper, but sometimes, I don't know what it is, but it was just mush sometimes. They didn't hold together. It's like making soil ice cubes. And you got to have the mix just right so it's not too hard, but it's not too soft, and it doesn't disintegrate when you water it. Because you got no, it's just a cube of dirt, and you got no structure around it. Elliot Coleman uses them. He swears by them, and he uses them all the time, but maybe he's gotten good and fast at them. I never could get fast enough with them. And these are better for me.
And how do you keep the soil from dropping in?
Well, when you put them in, and you have a peaty mix, and you dampen it a little bit. Make sure it's kind of moist. So when it's moist, it kind of sticks together. You know, soil sticks together when it's moist. You don't want it wet. You just want it like a damp cloth. If you can wring water out of it, it's too wet. Okay, but you want it a little damp, and then it'll stick. That little lip right there will let it stick. And you'll notice that two of the corners are open. They got slots down on two of the corners. Now, this is a ventilation hole. Somebody called me and thought, well, I can't get any dirt to stay in that hole there. I said, well, that's a ventilation hole. That's one of the beauties of the tray. This has no ventilation in between the different cells. So you get hot spots and cold spots. Usually the outside of it's warm and the inside's cold, or vice versa, depending on what the temperature is outside, right? And then if you got hot spots and cold spots, you get uneven growth. Hot stuff grows faster, the cold stuff doesn't grow as fast. So these little ventilation holes are not supposed to be full of dirt. It falls through, and you want them to fall through, so you got nice air circulation through there. These, what you do is you set it on a screen, like hardware cloth, up in the air. Or you can set it on a couple of 2x4s turned on end. And the beauty of that is when the roots hit that, and it's square, it's not round. Here you get root wrap. When you get root wrap, that plant really never recovers. I mean, people say you can slice it with a knife. Well, that stresses a plant in its young stage like that. Why would you want to stress a plant? I mean, you'll grow, the plant will grow, they can adapt, they can recover, but that plant will never be what it could have been. It'll never reach its full genetic potential. That's the word they're using. And so what happens is in a square block, it hits the one wall. If it hits, and you see two of those corners are solid. If it hits a solid corner, where does it go? It doesn't go around like it would here. It goes down. And when it goes down, you can notice the little gap there is open. And you got it up on a screen. It hits the air, and it just air prunes, just like a soil block would air prune. So you get all the benefits of soil blocks. Well, not all the benefits, but you get some of the benefits of soil blocks without having the aggravation of a soil block. But it's more expensive. It is more expensive than a set of soil blocks. But
I've never heard of a soil block.
Well, we'll get to that. But when it hits the slotted corners, it hits the air. And what does it do? It stops. Roots aren't going to grow in open air, right? So it stops. And then, so you got 50% of your roots pointed sideways and 50% of your roots pointed down, right? So that does, and they're stopped, they're not wrapping. So number one is, the reason they're better than these ones is, when these start to root wrap, they go south pretty quick. And they start looking a little fatigued and stressed, right? So you got maybe 1 or 2 days to get them in the ground before they start going south. With these, because they air prune and they don't root wrap, they'll last about a week longer. They'll eventually go south too because, you know, they run out of nutrients. You're just keeping on water and you eventually flush all the nutrients out of here. All right. That's why you don't want to overwater these either. You know, even though you won't waterlog them, you do flush nutrients out when you overwater. Right. So you get a longer period to get them in the ground. Give yourself about a week longer than with these. And the other thing is because you got 50% of your roots, they're not wrapping pointed down, and 50% of your roots pointed out, they take hold in the dirt. You know, you always sort of see when you transplant something, and then you'll know, you're like, oh, it took hold. It takes with those, it takes about 10 days sometimes, a week to 10 days. With these, you're talking about three days to a week because the roots aren't wrapping. They take hold quicker. You got a healthier plant. I mean, the guy who thought this up, they're called windstrip trays, and you can't get them commercially or wholesale. The only reason I got them is because I wanted them, and I made myself available to the company. I said, "Hey, if I come up there and do all the legwork, will you sell me some?" And they said, "Sure." And so they have a heart for the little farmer, but they're really a big multimillion-dollar company, and they tried to sell these at one point. The owner said they tried to sell these back in the '90s and make money with it, but they're so well made, there's no repeat customers. They last that long. Once they fill the niche, there's a little demand. It's like Harley Davidson's or something. You know, the demand builds up, and they only make a certain number. And that's how they do it. These guys, they could never make money on it because there's no repeat business. There's no planned obsolescence in this. And so he says, we're either going to make them cheaper or we're just going to have to use them in-house. So I said, don't make them cheaper. They're really good. And he says, well, we'll just use them in-house then. And because I have a special relationship, the first sale went really well. They liked it because they free up inventory. They only sell me their overstock, we only sell the overstock. I sell those for $7, but if you get in with me on an overstock sale, if you want to buy mass quantities, they're only like four this year. We're having a sale coming up. We're already sold out because they only open up so many. There's just their overstock, and because they need them too occasionally, because they treat them like they break them because they forklift into them. I mean, it's just like, oh, there's trays. I treat mine good. They last 20 years, you know. But they break them up, so they have to order some more occasionally. But they have to order a whole big old container, and they don't need 15,000 trays. They maybe need, you know, when they start needing trays, they're at right 5,000 or 6,000 trays. They maybe could need half a container when they order one. So sometimes they'll sell the other half of the container to the small farmer. A lot of times they shop around and try to get a big guy just to get it all done in one. But I've convinced them if I do the legwork, I'll do the mom and pop stuff and take all the time if you'll get it out to the small farmer. And they said, okay. And these are $7 because when I go up there, it's a 20 tray minimum because they can't deal with, you know, one or two trays. And but these I sell one or two, and I do $7 for those. $5 goes back to Van Wingerden, and I keep two for myself for all the aggravation. So if you're interested, see me after. But those are good. What happened? Oh.
So you water them things with what? A sprayer?
Yes. Good question. These are Dram tools. This one is too, but that's kind of their cheap version. You know, trying to compete with China there. But this is Dram too, and it's real good quality. This is a Dram 1. This is a Dram trigger sprayer. This is a Dram filter because you don't want to clog these holes. This is a Dram redhead sprayer, which is the best one. It's got like, I don't know, 500 holes in there. And unlike the cheap ones you can get at the store that have the holes just on the outside, you get a hollow center. You don't get a lot of water through that one on the shower setting. With this, it's just a shower. And it's got a full set of all the holes in the center, so you get a lot more water. It's a soft spray, and it doesn't bounce the dirt out of those things. And this is the redhead is the one I always get. And this one I use, too, for I don't use the shower on this. I use the flat spray, and I wash vegetables with this one. Wash root vegetables, you know, with this one. Oh, this is their attempt to be a cheap one, and it's like $20, I guess, maybe $15. This is not expensive at all. I mean, actually, this is not expensive. I don't know what all the parts are. I think this is the most expensive part. This brass. This is a kind of an important thing too. This what? Okay. This is important part too. This brass is about $25, but It's a really good quality made piece of tool. It's probably, this whole thing isn't $25. This is $25, right?
And you buy that separate?
Mm-hmm, they're all separate. All the pieces are separate. You buy it, you custom make it to what you want. You can do that online. Dram has an online store, and you can call them up, and they're real helpful. They're in Milwaukee, American-made. And you see this hole in here? This is an oversized hole. Okay, so a lot of these things are, a lot of your connections are get narrower than your hose, and you lose a lot of pressure and volume and all that. These oversized fittings are a lot better. I mean, I when I do my garden hoses, which is another tool, I come from the house or wherever I'm going to where the garden, and I do a 3/4 inch hose, which is a large size garden hose, 3/4 inch. It's 3/4 inch inside diameter. And then I shift over to a normal 5/8 garden hose because it's kind of hard to drag around a 3/4 inch hose full of water. So, but I at least like to get it to the garden with as big a hose as possible. And I buy oversized fittings in order to get it there because a lot of the fittings, they get down to 1/4 inch. On the fittings. So 5/8 goes to 1/4 inch, and you know, you lose a lot of your volume and a lot of your pressure that way. So oversized fittings are the way to go. And they have plastic versions of this, and they have an aluminum version of this, but I like brass. I don't know. It's from my seafaring days. No. Well, yes and no. Sometimes. Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have well water, but. You know, you got to filter that pretty good, or you clog this stuff up. But what I do is there's a fertigation tank that you can put that fish aquarium stuff into the water as it's going out. I don't really like it. I mean, the one I got it was like $50, and I should have just did the whole a sort of a siphon jet. I think I'm going to try next because I really can't tell when the thing is used up. It doesn't really suck it out. It kind of pressurizes it out, so it fades from like a dark brown I have to food color it to know when it's gone because it goes from, you know, it goes from, if you get something dark brown in there, it pressurizes it out rather than sucks it out, and it just fades from like a dark color to a light color, and then it's gone, I guess, you know. But when you put something clear in there, like that aquarium stuff, to take the chlorine out, you really can't tell when it's gone. You know, you just start guessing. I don't like that system. That's kind of a weak link in my thing.
But if you use the regular garden hose from the city, that would kill the plants or not be good for it.
It wouldn't be good for it, but sometimes you got, you know, no water is not good for it either. So.
I noticed that my plants were growing well, but as long as I'm using the indoor water, as soon as I use the rainwater, the growth is better.
If you can collect it, yeah, but it takes a lot of water to grow a garden. This is a conductivity meter. And I got one, and I got some dirt. I was going to do this. We can do this afterwards if you want to, if you're interested. This is how you measure your ergs. And the Reams guys, they really believe in this. Energy released per gram of soil, ergs. And all it is like two electrodes, and you're measuring, you're putting some distilled water in here, empty water that doesn't conduct electricity. You're shaking it or stirring this up. You're stirring this up. And then you're turning this on and measuring the resistance, and it'll give you the energy released in that soil. You know, its conductivity. And you want it for anything to grow. I don't care if you're organic. I don't care whatever. You need at least 200 ergs in that soil to grow. And if it falls below 200 ergs, you're not going to be growing anything. Your plants are just going to sit there.
ERGS.
Only the Reams guys talk about this. The Albrecht guys don't talk about this, and the Elaine Ingham guys don't talk about this. They say, you know, this is all handled.
So where
with,
would it be?
Huh?
What would you like to
read? Over 200, but nothing more than 1,200. It's measured in microsiemens. Okay, over 1,200 is called too hot. You ever heard of that term in gardening? Oh, that's too hot. Well, that means there's too much conductivity in the soil, and it burns plants. Okay. So about 500-600, right in the middle, is the best. Huh?
Where is it from?
I get this from a place called Pike Agro Labs up in Maine. And they sell them other places, but I like to give them the business. I like the guy there. But we can do that after class. Conductivity. And that way you can field monitor. You can field monitor. You don't have to send it to a lab. You can field monitor with your bricks, or you can field monitor your fruit and beat your competition at the market. Or while you're growing, you can do the sap and make sure your bricks is up in your plant. And here you can make sure your soil has enough ergs. A lot of times you'll get a good rain and you'll see things jump up because, you know, nitrogen is being carried down into the soil with the rain. Nitrogen makes things jump up, right? Atmospheric nitrogen. But then after the rain, they'll stall. They'll jump up a little bit and then they'll stall. Why? Because that rain has washed a lot of the solubility out. It created an initial solubility, which increased your nitrogen, increased your ergs. But then as it dries up and the water goes on down into the watershed, it sort of flushes out the solubility in your soil. And it takes time for the microbes to build that solubility back up. Okay? So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll go measure it. I don't want to put on stuff I don't have to. And I'll measure this and I'll say, you know, sure enough, about 2 or 3 days after rain, my, you know, the ergs are really low. And I'll go in there and I'll spray some fish emulsion on the soil and water that in. And just for that little lull period, keep those ergs up so I'm not lulling out. And I keep that stuff growing. Okay?
Fish emulsion.
You can just write it down. You'll find it. This is my compost monitoring, or no, sorry, this is the soil monitor, just like a meat thermometer, and that's how you really don't work off a, you do work off of dates in the spring. You want to know your last frost date, but it's really about soil temperature, and which I learned the hard way with my rotting okra. Remember that picture, the rotting okra?
What was
We went over the refractometer. That's what we're going to silent auction off. It's for leaves, you know, measuring the total dissolved solids, a.k.a. your nutrient density in your leaves. Here's some mowers. And these are all different than your rotary mower. This is the flail mower, and this is what it looks like underneath. Okay, this is it on a BCS. Like I said, this is, you know, anywhere from $2,500 to $8,000. And this is around anywhere from $800 to $1,200. I can't remember. But all it is little hinge blades that Y out and just beat the grass right where it does. And most of them have a roller here. It goes in front of it. So it pushes it down and then beats it up. And then you till it in. And that can handle, that's the kind of thing. This handled that big old Sudan grass we saw. This is a sickle bar mower. It's like, you know, scissors. And that's good. I would like to get a small one of these for the walkways. And then when I let my walkways go a little taller than I have been, and then cut it and lay that cutting down and just keep it there as a nice soft mat rather than chewing it up or bagging it or mulching it. You know, that's what I would like to do in my walkways. But they don't really make a small version of that.
Will it mold that way or not?
Huh?
If you have it laying down the grass, will it create mold or something?
Uh-oh, what's that? Oh, here we go. We have it laying down the grass with it mold that way.
Cut the grass, that long grass, and it lay there. Sometimes it gets wet, and then damp, and it gets moldy.
Oh, I haven't had that problem, but maybe. I mean, I might not do it if that happened. Or it might be good mold. You know, that's biology. Okay, Cover Cropping Corporation. Here's the weak link. Remember, I had to get the head shears on that tall because my mower wouldn't handle it. But once I got the head shears, I was able to mow it, and I put it in a bag and then redumped it. And this is after I've tilled it in. This is what it looks like. It went from that. Those pictures were taken just an hour apart. I hedged it, mowed it, dumped it back on there, tilled it in, and now I'm waiting 4 weeks for that to rot down and decompose down, and then I'll maybe do a finish till on that, and then plant away. Got it? Well, you know the answer to that.
1 to 3 inches.
Yep. This I try to go about 3 inches, and then when I do a final prep, I try to even do less than that because I really don't want to go deep at all at that point. I've already tilled it in 3 inches here, so I come up a little bit more. There, I get my mom to work on it again. People think I'm like a slave driver.
When you till it in, do you have to kind of redo your curves a little bit after that?
Yeah, you can. You know, yeah, sometimes. It just depends if I feel like it, you know, if I have the time. Here's what it looks like freshly mowed and freshly redone. So this is what you till in, okay, 2 to 3 inches. There it is with everything laying on the surface. I think somebody asked me this. You want to till it in right away while it's still green. Because when it's green and lush like this, it's full of nitrogen. You let that sit on the surface and the sun bake it, it's going to bake half the carbon out of it and about all the nitrogen out of it. And now you're not going to have that for your critters to eat down in the soil. Okay? So, you know, I don't let this lay on the surface. I try to do it right after, you know, no more than the next day. You know, I don't want that to go brown on me. I want to till it in while it's green. Because why does it go from green to brown? Because the sun's volatile. It's the nitrogen and carbon cycle. The green is the nitrogen, and the all you got left is the resilient carbon. And then it's just carbon food, and you lose all that nitrogen. Which carbon's good, but it's not as good as carbon and nitrogen. You know what I mean? There's your walking tractor, and there you can offset the handles on those. They got a rotary tiller on the back of that. Here's another regular tiller. We know the difference between a two-wheel tractor and a tiller, don't we? Both of these are tilling. This will always be a rototiller. This you can put different implements on. That's why it's called a two-wheel tractor. Because just like a tractor, you can put different implements on. That one can handle different implements. In fact, that's the same one, but it's got a different kind of plow on it. That's called it's a vertical plow. And some people like that. People sing the praises of that. And then here's your tractor. The only thing I'd really like, I wouldn't even farm with a tractor. I like using these tools because I can do permanent beds. With a tractor, I have to till up everything and reestablish the beds every time. But I would like a tractor to turn big old piles of compost. I would like a tractor just for the front end loader and be able to turn big, huge piles of compost like that.
Skid steer.
Yep. This is what I have, and this is what I would recommend. This is about, I bought it when they were on sale about $650 at Sears about 10 years ago. Now they're about $850, about $800. I think you can get them on sale. And they're a little bit wider. I think they're 16 inches wide instead of 14. They might be a little bit more horsepower. You know, everything gets a little bigger and wider. But that's okay. But the beauty of this is it's got counter-rotating tines. It means as the wheels turn this way, the tines spin backwards, and you are able to have a nice, steady, controlled crawl through the soil. Even a girl could do it.
Home Depot.
No offense, ladies.
Home Depot rents those out, and then at the end of the season, when I get so many hours, they'll sell them for...
Yeah, but they don't have these. They got the...
They're about $3,500 ones that they...
They do have the counter-rotating tines?
Yeah, they're...
Oh, I've never seen them. Usually they have the front tines. These are rear tines.
The little ones are right, but they have some big ones.
Okay. Well, then those would be good. I like the rear tine counter-rotating.
Yeah.
Some of them have the engine in the back and the tines in the front. Are the tines, or the engine on top and the tines run underneath, and those are the ones they want to just, you know, you're just like this, and they're all over the place. Okay, I tell you, it's worth the money. These are your BCSs. That's today's version of the Craftsman's tool. That's $600 to $700. I think it's a little more than that now. And this is your BCS. This is when you want to go a little higher, 2,000 to 6,000. I think I'm a little low on that. But here, I do the square foot that can handle. That can handle a quarter of an acre easy. Anything over a quarter of an acre to three acres, this can handle. And then after 3 acres, you're probably looking at a tractor. Here's some of the tillers. We covered some of these. But here's a rototiller. Everybody knows that one. This is called a rotary plow. Same thing, but vertical. And the beauty of this thing is, okay, this is important. On these tillers, you know that the tine on a tiller goes out from the hub and then does an L shape, right? And then the blade's right there on that L shape. Everybody know that? And it goes to the soil and it does this number, right? And when it's at the bottom of the stroke, if you've got some clay soils, what it'll do is it'll smear that, you know, whatever deep you set it at. That's why I like the shallow till, because you don't really get that effect so much when you shallow till. When you deep till, you're setting up what they call a plow pan. Same thing as a hard pan, but it's mechanically induced. Hard pans are kind of naturally induced, you know, just through the physics of the soil. But plow pans are mechanically induced. And rototillers, especially rototillers deep, they create plow pans. That's another bad thing about rotary tillers. So some guy invented this thing called a rotary plow, which does the same thing. It blenderizes the soil. You don't get away from that. But it does it this way so you don't get that slick, you know, bottom stroke that you do with a rotary tiller. So this is, you know, it has its purpose, and some people swear by that. Now this, you can get these for a BCS, a two-wheel tractor, but it'll beat you to death. Because these are like little spade, they're like, where's my spade shovel? Anyways, already lost. Oh, there it is. Basically, the principle here is you're taking a shovel and you're sticking it in and cocking it. It's on a cam shaft, meaning a shaft that kind of does this number. It's not a straight shaft. and it kind of goes up like a piston engine, and it digs in and kicks back and goes up and digs in and kicks back and goes up and does that, and it gives you a nice clumpy soil. You don't get any plow pan. It gets kind of chunky. You're still going to have to smooth it out somehow, but you can get a pretty decent till in there without creating a plow pan with they call it a spade tiller, because you're basically little spades on a camshaft. I like those, but I'm still thinking I'm going to need a rototiller just to get a decent seed bed. You know, so I really don't save anything. It seems like I always have to get back to the rototiller, even though I try to get away from it. This right here is what they call a hiller. You can use that for hilling potatoes, or you can use it for creating beds. Here's another form of a hiller. You know, two discs sort of slanted, and they just sort of, as you drag it through the soil, it kind of just heaps the soil to the middle, right? Here's a bed maker making a nice... This is really nice. I mean, there's not a lot of work there. But you know what you have to do to get that? You have to till the heck out of it, which is what we're trying to get away from, you know? You got to make it nice and fluffy. And we don't want fluffy dirt. We want dirt with structure. So this has its negative side, too, you know, because some of my friends bought one, and they do have to, I feel like they're having to over-till their soil just to get the beds made. It does save some work, and it makes nice-looking beds, but what's the cost? You know, you lose some soil structure. This is kind of cool. It's basically vertical blenders, and this is a finishing tool, a bed finisher. Instead of having a rototill lightly, you do a lumpy till where it's still kind of lumpy, and then you come in with this, and it has a smoother in the back, and you can have a nice, smooth bed surface. But it goes down a little too deep for me, but, you know, that's just the way they make it. I'd like to have one with a little shorter teeth so I don't mess up so much soil. But, again, you know, I wish I could design my own tools. Yeah. That one you just saw, that whatever, I forget the name of that. I call it a bed finisher. There's another name they use. That's an expensive tool. That's over $2,000. That appendage there. This is a subsoiler. You got to have a pretty good horsepower engine to drag that thing through the soil. But if you got too much acres to use your broad fork, then you got a tractor because you got a lot of acreage. You're going to have to rip that soil up. You can't use that. It takes you too much time. You're going to have to go with your tractor, and you stick this way down deep. Usually you hope to get about 2 feet, and all you're doing is trying to make a crack in the soil. You don't want to pulverize it down that deep, and you only want to drag this about 30 inches apart. You don't want to sit there and drag it every 6 inches or every foot. You want to they've done tests, and the optimum subsoil and width is about 30 inches. And the reason for that is if you fracture it and then plant, the roots will find that crease. If you fracture it too much, it'll just reform. If you fracture it about, we're talking maybe you got hard pan about a foot down, and, you know, your tiller won't touch it, this won't touch it, or you got a big piece of property and you can't use these things, then, you know, this is all you got. And, you, like I said, 30 inches apart, because you'll reform that plow, that hard pan, if you do it closer than 30 inches. But, you know, it takes some horsepower. Okay, in the time of trouble when we don't have gasoline anymore, I always get this question, especially with Adventists, you're stuck with hand tools. Here's your hoe and your cultivator on the other side, your hoe on this side. Well, you still have these hoes here if you bought some. And then if you wanted to cut grass, you'd have to use a scythe. Am I saying that right?
Scythe.
Scythe. I always get it wrong. Scythe. You'd have to use a scythe, like the Grim Reaper over there.
Can you buy them? Then?
You can buy them. There's people that farm with them even now, because they just want to do natural, you know.
I got about a 75-year-old one that's got the crooked, so you got the handles on.
Yep. Oh, they make high tech ones now.
Great.
Yeah.
Some on that.
I think you can only get that blade sharp enough by hand peening it with a peen hammer, ball peen hammer. It takes time, but you know, if you move out in the country, don't just buy one of these things. Buy about 5 of them, because when everybody comes out because they're fleeing out of the cities, you're going to need to put a tool in their hand and say, go cut the grass if you want to eat. This is a compost tea brewer. This is the cheap one. This is the cheapest you're going to get. It's about $125. You get an air pump, and the sort of the weird thing in here is you get this spiral bubbler. And so that sets down in your bucket. You hang your compost in a pantyhose on the side so it doesn't go all over the bucket, and you don't have to strain it out later. It's a little easier this way. You can just dump it all in there, but I like to do it this way. And you can make your own aerated, that's the key word, compost tea. Not just compost or manure thrown in a barrel somewhere. And now you're growing aerated microbes. And we can get into that later. You can look these up online. But they work really well. And you can't keep this stuff. You got to use it right away. Okay? Because they use up the food, and then they die, and they go anaerobic on you. You don't want that. These are some filters, irrigation tools. There's that Amquell I use. There's the top of my 300-gallon cube tank, and I got it running, the gutter running into it, the downspout running into it. I put a pantyhose. You use a lot of pantyhose in this stuff. I don't wear pantyhose, but thank goodness I have some friends that are girls, and they understand, and they always give me their old ones. And I always find a use for them. I put a pantyhose under there to fill it all with all the roof debris. And plus I got a filter on the top of it. And so I get pretty clean water in here. And then I just, you know, if it's rainwater, I don't have to put this in. But if I don't get rain and I use up all the water, I have to do the city water in here and then add this stuff on it. Okay? You see it takes out ammonia, chloramines, and chlorine. So fish can swim. Fish can swim in it. It's going to be microbially friendly. They make a different version of this. This is the one I use. So they sell it in the pond department where people have fish ponds and stuff like that and fish aquarium. They sell this at Home Depot. This is a fertigation tool where you can pick up water as you're sending water through. It's called a Mazai injector, I think. And it creates a low pressure there, creates a suction, and you can fertigate, stick this in with a gallon of fertilizer or something, and then fertigate as you fertilize as you irrigate. It's called fertigation. Okay? Fertilize as you irrigate. Really easy way to do it. You might clog up some of your filters, and I like this way rather than the one I got, but you know, I'm sort of stuck with it. I bought it, but because I can see the level going down. I don't like those things that use pressure. And this is a charcoal filter for your garden. They sell those. But charcoal filters only take out chlorine. They don't take out chloramines. Okay? Okay, this is a tool I made up. I mean, I use a lot of drip tape with my irrigation system. And I went to Home Depot and I bought these pipes, galvanized pipes. You don't have to be galvanized, but I bought galvanized pipes. I piped it all together. And then I have this in here, and I just bought a flange to go on the end, and I built these spools myself. I cut round circles, get threaded bar, and I PVC pipes in the middle of that. So I built my own spools, and I don't have it, but I drilled a little half hole in the end, and I stick a wooden dowel in there, and I can turn it. And I can reel in my drip tape that way. And if you don't leave this sitting out or all wadded up in a corner somewhere, like a lot of farmers do, you can keep that inside, and it'll last year after year after year. If you leave it all wadded up and let the sun bake it, and leave it out where the animals chew through it and all this kind of stuff, then you have to rebuy it and rebuy it and rebuy it. So if you take care of your stuff, and I had to build this special tool. They didn't make one, you know. So I had to build this special tool, and I love it. You know, it's like I'm real proud of that because I made it. And then here's your backpack sprayer. This is a 4-gallon sprayer, which is about all the backpacks are. But I really like this one. And I was told that SP1 is better. It's a little more expensive because I was told that compost tea corrodes seals. And the one that's an SP1 is supposed to be better seals that don't corrode. You have to pay a little more for it. But the cool thing about this is it gets the PSI really high. Diaphragm pump, this is a piston pump. The problem with piston pumps is they're high maintenance. But usually the parts are, you can buy the parts and do it. Diaphragm pumps, they are low maintenance, but they are lower PSI. Now, I was told when I was quizzing the lady about this, they make a new one that's a cross, and it'll get the PSI up to 150. Now, I might be doing that, falling into that more is better trap, because the lady said it doesn't matter what the PSI is, you got to buy the optional nozzle, because what I'm after, I thought PSI gave me that fine smoke spray when I want a foliar feed, you know, but she says no, it has 60 PSI is fine. What you need is the right nozzle to create that fine mist of a spray. I don't know. I believe her. I want to believe her. You know.
I would agree with that.
Huh?
The pressure is going to shoot at 100 feet or 50 feet.
That's what she said. Okay, you're my second witness. Maybe I'll buy the diaphragm pump, go with the low maintenance, and just buy the special nozzle. But you, remember, when you're foliar feeding, you're using these foliar. Now, if you're not doing that big, you can just buy a gallon sprayer and walk around and hold it. But if you're doing a large area, I'm telling you, that gallon sprayer gets pretty tedious after a while. Okay? This is nice because you can just sit there and pump it and spray and pump it and spray just like the Orkin man does, you know?
Oh, I see. So that handle pumps up the pressure.
Otherwise, I'm sitting there and every time I have to stop, pump, 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 and then spray, and then stop, pump, 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 pump. That's a lot faster. And remember, speed, time is money. And even if you're not doing it for money, you still want to go in and watch 3ABN. You don't want to spend all day out in the garden.
So what do those sprayers cost?
Those are really good ones. They cost about $200, but you can get them at the store for $100. But I like that SP3 because of they have that special thing. But I don't know. If they have the option on the nozzle now, maybe I'll go with the cheaper one. We already went over the seed flats. And these are soil blocks. This is the alternative. The good thing about these is you don't have to buy all that plastic. I mean, $7 a piece is expensive. You can get all these different sizes of soil blocks and make your own cubes. And I have a friend who does them. He believes in them. He's a seed block aficionado. I said, well, you're going to have to teach me how to do that one time. Here, you can pass that around. There's a seed, but he lets them dry out, and then he just rewaters them when he's ready to plant. And here, the cool thing about this is it doesn't work. I wish he had one. He didn't have it. But you can get ones that are big. You can get a mini version. No, the mini version's not there. And it'll fit right into that hole. And so when you get it this big, you drop it into that one. And when that one gets big, they make a bigger one. You drop that one into there. And there's no plastic. You get a whole set of sizes of that for about $300 or $400. And boom, you're done. Whereas, you know, here I've got over $1,000 invested in trays. You know. But to me, it's time. You know, it's less time. This takes more time. And I always talk about the time cost. You know.
So
here, you can pass those
around.
Don't drop them.
You put the seed right there, and then you have to cover it with a little dirt.
Yeah, initially. Yeah. But once it starts growing, that's it. I mean, then you're just, you know, fitting it in. I think you can go up three times. And so some things, you know, like tomatoes, you want to get them tall, so you pop them up to the big cube, you know. And other things you don't, you know.
You put the seeds on top of seeds, or what do you do?
No, you take the little block out and you put it in the next size block, bigger block, and it just keeps growing.
See right here? These were started in little bitty cubes, and now they put them up into bigger cubes. Now, the problem with this is you water from the top. Some people are forced to water from the bottom. But sometimes if you don't get the mix right, it just turns into a pile of mush. That's why, you know, I was having problems with it. You got to be good at that. And Elliot Coleman and some people are fast and they get the recipe right. I just never could master it. So I went with those. But if you can master it, it's a cheaper way to go. And you got a little bit more time on your hand, or you can get fast. It's probably a better way to go. And you get all the benefits of air pruning. That's what you're after, the air pruning and not getting the root wrap. Okay? And while I got this box out, this I use all the time. I got it from Ace Hardware. It's just a simple mechanical cutoff meter. I don't like the digital stuff. I like to start the watering myself. I don't want it to automatically come on because I want to go out there and water when I need to. You maybe not need to water at 7 o'clock every morning. Just because you can digitally set that to happen. I like to go out there and feel the soil and water when I need to. And with a drip system, you can water at night without getting the leaves wet. And then you can set the cutoff. You can set the cutoff. And because you're having to, with drip, you have to reduce the pressure. It doesn't work for the hours here. One of these dials is hours. I always use I figure out how many gallons I want to put on. And one is liters and one is gallons. I use the outside scale. And I put it on 600 gallons, turn it on to 600, turn the water on. It pumps out 600 gallons, just what I want, which is about a half inch of water over my entire bed. I mean, I do the math. And then it shuts off while I'm sleeping. I come in the morning, turn everything off, drain it, and I'm done. And I've gotten water at night right when the plants need it. Plants take up water from midnight to dawn. That's when they want to be at water. I don't want to stay up that late. This really helps. This is another one. Sometimes you plant seeds on the top of the soil. They don't even want to be covered with dirt. And you're really worried about bouncing them out of the cells then. This is a mister. And again, Dram sells this. And you take the redhead sprayer off and you put this on, and it lets out a water mist. So you mist the cells from the top. Okay? And that way you don't bounce the seed. Now, once they start growing, I can switch back over to this, you know, because they're rooting in. But initially, I don't want to bounce the seed out. This might be a little too much for it. You know, light seeds that are right on top. And I'll use this to mist it. So that's a cool tool to have. Let's keep on going. Okay, I came in with this bin. These are my harvest bins. I love these things. I used to have to order these online. They're about $15. But they're a great harvest bin because they keep humidity in. Some things you like to hold the humidity in. Some things you don't. You don't want humidity to hold in. But for greens and root vegetables, these are great. And I pick them in the field. They're all dirty. I fill them full of water. And then I take them out and I spray them. And I have another one of these full of clean water. And I wish them a little cup. And then I put them on a table, a hardware cloth table, and let them drain in the shade, not in the sun. But these, and I harvest with these bins, and I store in the refrigerator in these bins, and these are just great. If you take all the shells out of the refrigerator, they just fit inside a standard refrigerator. You can get about 2 stacks, maybe 3 stacks in a refrigerator. These are your open crates. Now, these you can get like that nursery I go up to and do the trays. They do orchids. If you find a nursery, usually they got more orchid crates than they know what to do with, and they'll sell you these for like $1 a pop. Or maybe they'll just give them to you. And these are good for certain other vegetables like tomatoes. And they're not good for tomatoes because you don't want to stack tomatoes too high. But certain other things like potatoes and stuff like that that you can stack high, you can put in there. And they're great for starting sweet potatoes. You plant sweet potatoes in there and you get the starts and then you go plant the starts. But they're ventilated crates. And sometimes ventilated is better because you don't want the moisture, you don't want the humidity to be in hell. A walk-in refrigerator would be ideal if you're really going to get into this. And this is called a CoolBot. And you can build an insulated house. If you're a construction guy, you can build an insulated house, put in a regular window air conditioner in there. I don't know what it doesn't have to be anything super strong. And this will take the governor off of it and let it, a window air conditioner, get that insulated house down to 32 degrees. You don't want it 30 degrees. You want it about 38 sometimes. You know, you said it. But To have a big refrigerator without spending $8,000. This cost about $200. And plus,
what does that do? Why
do you want one? No, you're building a room. Because
if you're harvesting, some plants got to be put in the refrigerator right away. You're going to fill your refrigerator up pretty quick if you've got a big space, right?
You're talking about saving your fruit.
Well, getting it to market. You know, I'm thinking like I'm marketing this stuff.
I'm still back here planting. I wonder why you want a refrigerator when you're
planting. Yeah, well, I go back to yours. And trellising. Remember, trellising is good. It gets the plants off the field, but it's an added time and it's an added expense. Is it worth it? There's time to buy it and install it. You got to store it. So trellising, be careful. You don't just go trellis crazy, you know. Avoid, if all possible, any vining crop can be trellised. Common crops we trellis are tomatoes. We use these. You get this at Tractor Supply. I don't see it at Home Depot. It's a galvanized wire. It's made for cattle fencing. You can tell this is the bottom for rabbits and that sort of stuff, and this is the top. They save some wire that way. And it's woven wire. It's not like rebar. What do they call that? Reinforcement wire, you know, for cement guys
rebar.
Use. Well, rebar is the pole. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Tie wire.
No.
I don't know what it's called, but it's for cement. Guys in cement do it. Yeah, it's like a wire. But it's welded and it comes off and it rusts. This is galvanized. It doesn't rust. It's woven instead of tack welded. It lasts longer that way. And I have to buy this in 330-foot rolls for about $190, and one of these cost about $4, I guess. I got about $4 of material in it, and I sell them at market for $6 a pop, $2 of labor, $4 of material. Yep, they do it for tomatoes. It's just their field fence, and when I use it for tomatoes, I always have to turn it upside down, because why? Anybody know the answer to that?
Gets it bigger, gets your fruit off of
it. Yep. All the big tomatoes are at the bottom. So I did it this one year, and I learned the hard way because I couldn't get I was like the monkey putting his hand in the coconut, you know. I couldn't get it out, you know. I walked them up, you know, and got them out. So
that 2-foot diameter or 30-inch
I worked it out. You use geometry here. You work out how much circumference do you need to get a certain diameter. These are, I think they're 2 feet. Yeah, I like them that. Some people make them a little smaller, you know, they do it. I count 13 squares cut, 13 squares cut. And then I just bend the whiskers together. Okay, now you're probably, what's the question you're going to ask me now?
How do you secure them to the ground?
Yeah, there you go. How do you secure them to the ground? Because you get a tomato in here and they'll blow over in a wind, right? They don't have prongs that stick in them, so you got to,
I carried it in for you, so I knew what you were going to
ask. You go to Tractor Supply, and you get these T-posts. These are T-posts. That's why they're T-posts, because they look like a T on the cross section. Okay, you'll notice they have a paddle on the end that stabilizes it. It's not going to be very stable if it's just a bar in there. But it only stabilizes it really one way. I mean, this way it's not going to stabilize it when it's flat like this. See? But it'll stabilize it this way. So you got to, sometimes you put it in this way, sometimes you put it in this way, depending on where your force, most of your forces are. And then you drive them in, and of course you're going to lose some of that height, you know. And you drive them in. They're made so you can take them out. You don't want them too dry when you take them out, or you won't be able to get them out. But if it's after rain, that's a job you do after when it's soil's moist and the soil's not so hard, is you only want to pound them in until you just got these little ears sticking up. See these little ears? You don't want to pound it below, you don't want to stop right there when you still see the little ears. And that's just deep enough so they secure, but they're easy to wobble and take out. Now, sometimes, you know, I've had to buy a T-post puller because sometimes I can't wait for a rain. I got to get them out of the ground. You know, time is, you know, I got to get it done. So I do have a T-post puller, but you're going to have to get a T-post driver, which is just a metal pipe that's heavy, and you just slide it up and down and bang them in. And you can get a cheap one at Home Depot for about $25, $30, something like that. T-post driver. And you see the nobbins on them? That's so, I didn't bring a wire in with me. I have it in the car. I was going to bring it. But you just, what you do is you drive these in about, I usually do it at like every 4 or 5 cages. I drive one in. Now, if you've got a big land, I won't do more than 400 cages. It's hard to stow these cages after you get them made, right? So I'll do about 400 cages, which is enough for about 5,000 square feet, one of those fields we saw. After that, you're going to have to do what the big guys do, and that's stake and weave. Okay, I don't do that. I'm small enough where I can still use the cages. That's more tomatoes than I can handle right there. And this is where your big money is if you're trying to get into the business. In July, when tomato season's coming in and everybody's been waiting for those fresh homegrown tomatoes, that's why you can charge $4 a pound. And they'll buy out. I sell out $4 a pound. Maybe you guys wouldn't pay more than $2 a pound. But I tell you, people that want a fresh tasting tomato,
it's got a Brix by 8.
And yeah, it's got a Brix at 8. And they come back week after week. And the market determines that price, not the church board. You know, so I say I'll sell it to the church. I got a deal worked out. Well, it was supposed to be a good deal. I sold it to them for 25% less, $3 a pound. But even that was too high for them. I said, well, you don't determine the market. You know, I got a free market society. The market determines what I can give. I'm giving you a 25% discount, you know. So anyway, but what you do is you run a wire every one of these, you know, and the end ones you do like this, you know, with the paddle facing this way. Because you're going to get the force, you know, this way, you know, as you tie it together, wire it up. Then the ones in between you do like this because these cages are going to want to blow this way and this way, right? So, and then you do one about every 4 cages, and I space them so they're almost touching. And then you run then to lock them together because, you know, you don't lock them to this, you lock them to the wire. And they sell you these clips. Well, they give you these clips when you buy these T-posts, right? And all you do is put the wire in there and then come around and grab it here and grab it there and clip it in. And this holds the wire on against this nubbin and it doesn't go up or down. Well, it could go up, but it usually, you know, get pressure down on it. And it rests on that nubbin hard and it doesn't move up or down on you. And then you just tie wrap the top of the case to the wire. It's really neat. Really good way. Whatever you are comfortable with getting. Yeah. Just so as long as it's galvanized or aluminum, something that doesn't rust on you. Okay. One plant. One tomato plant. Yep. And I've seen, if you go growing good, you can tie wrap these together and make a one. I've seen guys, because a lot of times the tomato grows up and down over the side. I never do it, but I have a friend, he likes to tie them together, and he has a tomato tower. And he's an organic grower. He sprays a lot of fish emulsion on them, though. That's his, you know, I tell him he's a fish emulsion addict. Tomatoes, sweet peppers, you trellis. Pole beans, you trellis, and I use the taller ones, T-stakes for the pole beans. We saw it on that picture. Cucumbers, I trellis. I do it about every 6 feet, the things. But I've learned through experience, I tried to grow cucumbers up a vertical lettuce. You know, I got some of this. It wasn't quite this. It was a different one, but it was galvanized, and I did it vertical, and then I strapped this to the T-post, right? Right over the cucumbers, and cucumbers just don't grab like beans do. They've got little tendrils and they want to, but they have a hard time going straight up. So, by accident, I figured out if you lean it over and grow it and put your T-post in at a 45 degree slant, man, they love that, and they can manage that 45 degree slant. And I tell you, that really made a difference in. You know, because I was always having to like weave them through the vertical lattice, but here they can just grow it up themselves. No, I don't use. This is just tomato cages. This I just do a fence. I do a fence, and I put this at the smaller version because they're not going to grow up that far. I do it like a 5-footer, and I put them in at a slant, and then lay my fence along the top of it, and they just grow up that fence at an angle. That's a little trick. Yeah, cucumbers. They don't like to grow straight up. I found that out the hard way. Keeps fruit off the ground. Of course, we know all that. And, you know, fruit off the ground helps. Keeps sprawling plants vertical. You get better ventilation that way, less fungus and threats, and out of the walkways so you can mow your walkways because sometimes those vining crops want to go all over the place, right? Like sweet potatoes. When I want to mow the walkway next to a sweet potato bed, I have to, you know, pick all the tendrils up and throw them in the middle. But they're so dense, it doesn't matter. Here we have all the things I just explained to you. Here we have, that's the stake and weave method. When you have more than 400 tomato plants, then you have to, this becomes a pain, okay? So then you have to do what the big guys do and do stake and weave. I don't do it, but I have done it on a few things. And it's okay. I'd rather use the cages while I can, though. Then you have the horizontal lattice, a lot of times flowers and I do bush beans in through these too, because bush beans want to lay over on you and fall over, and you do a horizontal lattice on that, and that's just some nylon lattice that you put there, and then you have some vertical cloth lattice, and I sometimes pole beans on these. At home I do pole beans on this cloth lattice. It's a little less involved than tying strings and all that kind of stuff I do in my sort of more commercial crop. And this is a time-up. You put a little tape in there, and it saves time tying tomatoes. Because a lot of times tomatoes grow out here, and you have to pin them back to the cage. And this does it really fast. You just go click, and it's stapled together, click. Again, you know, it's a $40, $30 tool, but it's a lot faster than sitting there tying every little branch. And time is money. And, it's, you know, if a tool saves you a lot of time, then it's worth it. They call them a time-up, or I call them a... tapenator. The tape? No. I wish they would make something that was biodegradable. There's my early on when I hardly had any vegetables. I had a lot more later. But there's my stand. See, I got the church, Third Angel Farm at Gazda Gardens in the Seventh Day Adventist sign, and there's me at the market, open for business. Market tools, you know, there's all the market tools, tent, scale, display table, display baskets. I don't know if you're into that, but that's part of it. And that's it.
Very good.
All the good markets on Saturday, but so I can't do those. So I do a Wednesday market and a Thursday market. It'd be nice if it was a little gapped out a little more, like a Tuesday and a Thursday, but I don't have that. But, you know, you guys that don't want to do this but want to get into some aspect, you got organizational skills. It takes a lot of organization to organize a farmer's market. do it. If they don't have a Tuesday market, maybe guys like me would like a Tuesday market. Maybe there's some consumers out there who would rather have a Tuesday market than a Wednesday market. Organize a market. But you don't have to reinvent the wheel. People have already done it, and they've been successes at it. Copy them, okay? Don't make it hard on yourself. I want to talk. There's a few more things I brought that you might want to know. I made these tomato. These are tomato crates. I made these myself. Okay, you don't have to do that. This is my rain hat that is cost me $40. But man, does it keep the rain off? Because sometimes, especially if you're trying to make a living at it, you have to be out there in the rain. And this keeps the water from going down the back of your collar. It's a cement. It's like the Morton Salt guy. That's what they call me when they see me. Oh, you're the Morton Salt guy. And are we commercialized or what? You know, like we know every brand, right? Of course, I knew what they were talking about too, so I can't really talk. But but I'm like that guy on Johnny Carson, right, with all the animals. Right? This is a sun hat with a real wide brim. It's tight weave. Doesn't let any sun through. You're probably going to need this, or you're going to get skin cancer probably. Well, we know that's not true because we don't have high fat diets. But still, I don't want to get sunburned. So those two are I love those two. This is called a ground staple. You can get a box of 100 of these pretty cheap. They rust. They're not galvanized, but that's okay. You can buy some more. You can pin down your row covers on it. You can pin down weed cloth on it. Because like when I have to store these tomato cages, you know, I don't want to store them because after a year of sitting there, weeds grow all through them, becomes a mess and an eyesore, you know. So I put a landscape cloth down, and you can pin it down with these things. They just come in handy. My drip tape, if you leave drip tape just on the top of the beds, especially early on, you get some wind. That wind will whip that drip tape all around. So I peg it down with loosely with some of these just to keep it from blowing all around and, you know, brushing up against my young crops. A few more. Okay, let me get the things out of the box. This is my. I bought this this year. I bought this this year. This is called a soil probe. And see, before I had made some money at this, I used to have to dig a hole with a trowel, and you have to use aluminum or stainless steel, something that doesn't rust because it'll affect your soil test if you use a rusty shovel. And dig a hole, and then once you get a hole dug, you take a slice 6 inches down. You've got to ask your lab how many inches to go down because everything's calibrated to a certain inch depth. You throw everything out of whack if you don't do it exactly what they calibrate their machines for, okay? So I had to go 6 inches down, and this took a lot of time, and get a slice and put it in the bucket. And a clean bucket that wouldn't affect the test, you know, and then stir it up and send them in a sort of a composite mixture of my soil. But this took a lot of time digging, and you want to take a lot of probes to get a good, nice average, you know what I mean? And this took a lot of time. So this, all I have to do is just kind of, when it's after a rain, when it's kind of soft, I step on it, step it down, it cuts through, and then all I have to do is open up, and I can see a profile of my soil. And take that sample out and put it in a bucket and mix it up and send it into my soil lab. Cost me $120, but I love it. And it saves me a lot of time. I've been wanting it for a long time. Of course, we got trowels. What else did I want to show you? Oh, this is kind of cool, and you don't find them too often. This is an oscillating. When I didn't have the drip tape and I was having to water the beds from overhead, I had this really narrow version, and I could set this on a sawhorse on the straddling my 4-foot-wide bed, and I could get a nice skinny sweep back and forth. Now I use drip tape when I don't like watering overhead. I went to the drip tape after this, but when I do cover crops in the bed, I still use this because you know drip tape doesn't really work with broadcasted cover crop seeds. So I still use this for my cover crop in my beds. What else? These are kind of cool. These are oversized fittings with a nice big opening. And I like this. Why? Because I can have it hooked up and then I can bleed off the pressure here without unscrewing it. It's really great to be able to bleed off the pressure. Because a lot of times if you leave pressurized lines in the hot sun, you blow hoses. And hoses are expensive. So you always, after you finish with them, you make sure you bleed off the pressure or that sun will. But water doesn't expand much, but it'll expand enough in hot sun to blow a hose. So avoid that. Okay, I'm done.
This media was produced by Audioverse for the NAD Health Summit. If you would like to learn more about the NAD Health Summit, please visit www.nadhealthsummit.com. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.